So over our midweek services this season of Lent, we will be going through the Book of Lamentations, which I'm willing to bet is not a book that is on the top of everyone's reading list. And in fact, it's pretty easy to miss because it's short and it's among some much larger prophetic writing. But the idea of lament, I think, is a lost art. Our culture today will talk about grief in certain ways. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. Or mourning or something like that. And there are many things to grieve and be grieved by and mourn. But what do you do with that? Sometimes when people try to express grief, they just end up making noise. Like there's nothing processed. There's nothing to be gained from making that noise. It's just like a fan. It just spins and makes noise and then gets nowhere. And whatever lament is, it's different. Lament is about naming the pain, finding ways to explain it and describe it, and understanding at its core what's happening. And there really isn't a better book in the Bible to do this than, well, the Book of Lamentations. So to get at this, we'll, over the next several weeks, be talking about different aspects of what it means to lament. And for tonight, it's just giving permission. Grief can be a scary thing to express. In part because it's a very vulnerable experience. I mean, if you just met somebody at the fellowship meal and they sat down and started talking about some very heavy, dark, sad things that they've experienced, I think we can all agree that's going to be weird. And I'd rather that not happen like that. But I guess the question then is why? Why is it so vulnerable? Why is it so disarming or uncomfortable? Now, a couple things to note as we go through the series. There's going to be a lot of tensions. Not like tension in the room where we hate each other or something like that. I hope, anyway. But tensions where multiple things that are going to seem to be in conflict are actually going to be true at the same time. The Book of Lamentations was written as a response or a lament to the Babylonian exile, when after many, many decades of warnings to the people of Judah and Jerusalem to stop worshiping gods from the outer regions of Canaan, to the extent that children were being sacrificed to various fertility gods, that eventually God used the Babylonian Empire to come and wipe Judah and Jerusalem off of the map. If you are an Indiana Jones fan, this is where the Ark of the Covenant vanishes from history. No, it's not going to be found, by the way. That moment, that cataclysm, is hard to overstate because the entire people, they lost connection to their land where they've lived for many generations. This is supposed to be the promised land. They're supposed to be the chosen people, descendants of Abraham. And even worse, as you read through the prophets, they're now cut off from the presence of God himself. And it starts to generate some very important questions. Because if God was supposed to be in the temple on Mount Zion, and it is now just ash and rubble, where is he? And not only that, but where and how do we come near to him again? We'll revisit that in a few minutes. If you noticed during the reading, the writer expresses His feelings, his lament, his grief, the mourning process in many different ways. And I think that speaks to kind of the breadth of what it means to lament. There's no one way to do it. And yet, to lament, to express your grief, is an invitation to creativity. It's one thing to be able to name the pain, and that's essentially where you need to start. But then after naming it, how do you describe it? And one of the things that you're going to see as we go through this book together, there are going to be a lot of questions about what God is up to, and none of them are going to get answered. And so the first major tension to feel here is the idea that as they are now trying to make sense of everything that happened, they still cry out to God, believing that in some way He is there, He is near, He is somewhere in a way that is accessible. And at the same time, He has no interest in rescue. Now, most of us here are old enough that we have seen some real horrors. For those of you who feel like you haven't, give it time. And if you think about those times, that tension often rings very true. At least I know I can speak for myself. On the one hand, my faith has given me an ability to suffer because I know that God is present and God is revealed in suffering. And at the same time, He has expressed no interest whatsoever in removing that from my life. That can evoke a lot of different responses, one of them being anger. You're going to hear a lot of anger in Lamentations. Sadness, despair, and all, a whole host of other emotions that go along with that. And one of the things that I find so fascinating and helpful about Lamentations is that it just gets laid out there as if God is actually not terribly insecure and can handle it. So if the opening salvos from the book of Lamentations is really just a permission to lament, what does it mean to lament? Or what does it mean to, on the other hand, what does it mean to express grief in ways that might not be helpful? There's a huge amount of our culture right now, and I think we have social media to thank for a lot of that, that so much of what people do is performative. Outrage has become a finely tuned, manufactured machine of some kind. And it's become weaponized in ways that I think we can all agree are destructive. Sadness and grief, I don't know how many of you spend too much time on the many options that we have, but I still will never understand this tendency on social media for something bad to happen and people to then decide, I need to get out my phone, put this on the internet while I'm sobbing. And I don't know about you, and maybe this is just because I'm a jerk, but I can't help but think when I see that, how realistic, how real is your grief in that moment? Because whenever I've been in that situation, the last thing I want to do is go anywhere near my phone. Maybe I'm just getting old and cranky. That was not an invitation to make a comment. I am getting cranky, yeah. Or think about it in another way. And hopefully you've all had this experience or you've witnessed this because it's truly funny. There's a playground with kids. And one kid just wipes out, just eats cement. And after the shock wears off, looks around, and there's no adult there to pick him up. So he gets up and goes and finds one to cry to. It's pretty funny. But I think for us, grief, when it is expressed in a performative way, when it is expressed to somebody with the intention, the specific intention that I'm going to express this grief to you and you are somehow going to rescue me from it, is a setup for real disappointment. Or how many times have you been talking to somebody about something that was hard, that you were sad about, you were frustrated with, or something like that, and as you were talking to them and they were listening and truly listening, you found yourself getting really frustrated. And it's not because they're not listening. Sometimes, there are many reasons for that. There are therapists in the room you can talk to, not me, that are actual experts on this, but sometimes that frustration builds because the expectation is that they're somehow going to take that away from you. And that's not what they're there for. Whatever lament is, it's the opposite of that. It's more about naming, more about processing, more about finding some kind of way to make sense of it, finding some kind of meaning, while at the same time, and here's yet another tension, while at the same time recognizing that sometimes suffering just happens and there is no explanation, there is no meaning, it just is, and you have now an opportunity either to get bitter or to get better. It's up to you. To lament is to be able to express what you are experiencing in such a way that it provokes action. It provokes growth. It provokes depth within you. You can already start seeing in our reading from Lamentations how some of this starts to play out. The author is a very good writer, and as he's writing, he's finding ways to get at the multi-layered, complex series of horrific tragedies that he has witnessed. Now, this is Ash Wednesday. It's Lent. So I would probably get fired if I didn't find some way to connect this to Jesus. But actually, the connection is very easy. The Babylonian exile is one of the most formative things to have happened to the nation of Judah, and as at this point in history is when they take on the label of the Jewish people. When they realize that they've been disconnected, separated from the presence of God, from the temple, it creates a theological crisis. Where is God? And this is the moment in history where they start to realize that the only option that they have is to preserve who they are. This, as best we can tell, is when formally the leaders of the people started to gather the writings that had apparently existed for quite some time before that and start codifying them and bringing them together. This is really when the Hebrew Bible comes together. This is when they realize that they don't have access to the presence of God, but what they can do is gather and meditate on the word that he has given them. The obvious day to do that would be the Sabbath. And hence the synagogue is born. This is when the key features of what actually allows the Jewish people to persevere and endure in spite of multiple empires coming close to just smashing them again. That they became the storytellers about who they are and who God is, but not in a fanciful, mythical sort of way, but in a way that they tell the stories and they include the pain. It's one thing to just be the Brothers Grimm and come up with some moral tales. It's another thing entirely to recount the history of your people, including the things that you really, really would rather pretend weren't there. That is lament. Now, after the Babylonians came the Persians, and then the Greeks. That gets a little complicated. And then there's a little bit of a revolt, and it sort of works for a while. Don't worry about the details. And then the Romans come. And so when Jesus hits the scene, there's a very real awareness that the people are still in exile, that even though over 500 years had passed, the damage has still not been undone. And what the people wanted from Jesus and from many other potential would-be messiahs or messianic movements was for God to lead their rescue. And if that's not the most human impulse around, I don't know what is. Anytime life has gotten hard, at least for me, maybe I'm the only one, I've just wanted to get out of this mess. I want the pain to stop. I want God to pull me out of it. When in reality, He never has done that. He's dragged me through it. I suspect I'm not the only one. And I suspect I'm not the only one that has done so kicking and screaming. But God has this tendency to pull us through things, not pull us out. And there's another tension to be found in there. And so it was very natural then for the expectations of the people placed onto Jesus, really projected onto Jesus, was this kind of rescue. And once you see it in the Gospels, you can't unsee it. There's a constant questioning of God, Jesus, when are you going to restore the kingdom? In other words, when is this long exile going to be over? When are we going to be free? When is the pain going to stop, the pain of living under an occupation force? Or to mutate that into our world? When is the pain of my failing health going to stop? When is this fractured relationship going to be mended? Is it going to be? Or do I just have to learn to live with that pain? It would take 30 seconds to find things on any news source of your choosing to grieve over. The natural question then being, God, are you going to do something? All of that gets funneled onto Jesus because those were the hopes and expectations of the people. And Jesus has this remarkable ability to disappoint almost everybody. Because He's not interested in rescue as though He were Superman. In fact, Superman is technically a Christological heresy. If you want to know more about that, it's very nerdy, but I'll talk for a while. Because Superman just comes from outside the world and beats up the bad guys and then everyone lives happily ever after. Jesus isn't interested in that. And because this is Lent, we get to focus very closely on how Jesus, rather than coming from outside to beat up the bad guys, He becomes part of the inside. He takes on the mantle of humanity, the human experience and all of its pain, frustration, and disappointment. And His goal, as He expresses over and over again, even though basically nobody understands it, is to attack the source the core issue, which is not, in his world, systems of government, oppressive regimes, as bad as those all are. His followers will address those. But Jesus is interested in our heart, because that's where it all starts. That's where our tendency, or this innate ability to harm ourselves and those around us, what the Bible will call sin, that's where it comes from. And rather than fixing the issues that will make our lives easier, instead, he surgically attacks the core of the problem, which is me. And it's you. And it will cost him everything. So on this Ash Wednesday, as we begin asking over the next several weeks, what does it mean to lament in a world that is full of grief, but very mixed ideas about what to do with that grief? How do we name it? How do we talk about it? How do we express it to God? Not in a performative sense, but in a real sense. Not in a way where we censor it or we express our grief in a way that makes us look good and spiritual and super mature or something like that, but in a way that is honest. Or maybe it's better to say in a way that honors the pain. Because as Jesus then rescues us from the death within us, he will create a pathway to honor, whereby we can honor the pain within us. And if we learn to honor the pain within us, then we can start addressing the pain around us. And that makes it so worth it. But for now, we stand in the tension of God being present with his people always, in spite of the circumstances, and at the same time having no interest in rescuing us from it. Amen. As you are able, please rise.